Paramount Pictures presents Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis in a Neil Simon story, The Out of Towners. With Sandy Baron, Anne Meara, Robert Nichols, Anne Prentice, Graham Jarvis, Ron Carey and Phil Burns. As the credits are screened, short clips of film are shown, alternating between picturesque rural countryside and busy built-up big city locations. Surrounded by tall, mature trees is a small modern housing development. Each house is very individual, but they all have lush green lawns with neatly kept gardens. George and Gwen Kellerman are about to set off from their large white house that sits in the centre of the small estate. George places a suitcase on the back seat of the car. Gwen emerges from the house followed by two children, a dog and an older woman. George and Gwen get into the car, and the children wave as they drive off.
Why you had to rush me out of the house like that, George? We have an hour before the
give ourselves plenty of time. We'll be at a flat on the way to the airport.
Oh, we're married 14 years. We never had a flat. And I get my eyes on backwards.
Hey, Gwen, feel my chest.
What's the matter? You're not having a heart attack or something?
No, I just want to make sure we got the tickets. Feel my chest.
Yes. That feels like tickets to me. I wish that you would calm down, George. You're getting me very nervous. I think I glued my eye together. It certainly is sticky, especially this one. You're very excited about this, aren't you, George?
You mean excited? The New York Jet? Do you know how many fellas are in the executive bathroom right now crying into paper towels because they picked me? Every one of them. I mean, vice president in charge of sales, New York division. I'll say I'm excited. Feel the other side of my chest. See if my wallet's there.
Oh, yes. That feels like your wallet. But you deserve it, George. Nobody worked harder for it or wanted it more than you have.
George pulls his large blue estate car off to the side of the road.
It's what you want too, though, huh?
The New York job?
Yeah, the job, the move to New York, the whole new way of life. That's what you want too, isn't it?
I want anything you want, George.
Well, then say I did the right thing, huh? Say that we'll be happier in New York than we've ever been in our whole lives.
Yes, you did the right thing. We'll be happy in New York.
Here. Happier in New York.
Happier than we've ever been in our lives, yes.
He kisses Gwen on the cheek and rejoins the road. They drive into a large car park at the airport. George finds a space near the terminal building where he parks the car. They both get out of the car and George picks up the suitcase from the back seat, then locks the car door. Gwen carries a small grey overnight bag. Arm in arm, they make their way across the car park into the terminal building.
It'll be quick. great for the kids. You know, one thing you don't have to worry about in New York is the schools, huh?
I wasn't worried about
the schools. You got maybe the best private schools in the world in New York. And even if we don't get them in, I hear that the public schools are even better than the private schools. New Yorker, please. The first thing you got to do, find us an apartment.
50 cents, please.
Huh? Oh. And don't worry about the rents being too high, because I'll be making more money. And we won't have the expense of a car, because we really don't need a car in the city, all right?
I wasn't worried about the high.
We'll try to find a place near the park, huh? So we have a place to run the dog? I know you. You're worried about the dog. But everybody has dogs in New York, and there's millions of places you can run them, as long as you keep them on a leash, so I wouldn't worry about the dog. And don't eat on the plane.
No.
Huh? Because we got an 8:30 reservation at the Four Seasons restaurants, which may be, huh? Oh, yes, sir. Mr. and Mrs. George Kellerman, flight 406. Four Seasons restaurant may be the greatest restaurant in the whole country, so the last thing I'd worry about in New York is eating.
I wasn't worried about eating.
Oh, we have an 8:30 appointment. My wife is worried about the weather. Are we going to land on time?
Our last reading in New York was 68 degrees and clear.
Ah, you hear that? It's beautiful in New York.
I wasn't worried about the weather.
All right, Mr. Kellerman, you and your wife are confirmed on flight 406, boarding hour 83. Are these your bags?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to carry this one. It's not heavy.
Well, wait,
and I
can let the airline carry it. Let the airline do it. It's their job. Don't worry about the luggage.
I wasn't worried about the luggage.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
George and Gwen file out of the airport terminal with the rest of the passengers and walk to the waiting aircraft.
Gwen?
Yes?
Are you excited?
Yes, George.
You don't look it. You don't look excited.
Yes, well, I'm very excited, George. Say yes.
Thank you.
They climb a narrow flight of steps at the rear of the plane. The aircraft accelerates down the runway and lifts off, soaring up into a clear blue sky. The stewardess brings a tray with a meal of fried chicken and salad and hands it across to Gwen.
Coffee or tea with your dinner?
No coffee and tea, no dinner. Thank you.
And nothing at all?
Please.
Gwen allows the stewardess to take back the tray.
George. Maybe we should have a sandwich. You didn't have any lunch.
At 8:30 tonight, we're going to sit down to one of the great meals in eating history. I'm not going to spoil it with some stale chicken from a previous flight. You know airline food. Will you stop worrying about my stomach?
Just didn't want you to be hungry.
And I got 2 bottles of my Elsa medicine packed in the suitcase, if that's what you were just thinking.
I wasn't thinking about it.
Then relax.
Okay, I'll try.
The plane flies high above the tall skyscraper buildings of New York City.
The captain has turned on the no smoking sign. Please extinguish all cigarettes.
Would
sure
you fasten your
seatbelts,
please?
And your seats are in the upright position in preparation for landing at New York's Kennedy Airport.
Put your chair in an upright position, please.
Oh, excuse me. 5 minutes early. Isn't that fantastic?
It's very big, isn't it?
Of course it's big. That's why they call it New York. Hey, come here. You're missing the whole skyline. Oh. All right. Huh? Is that a beautiful city, or is that a beautiful city?
Oh, that's a beautiful city.
They move to the other side of the plane and look out of the window.
Would you all please fasten your seatbelts? Would you fasten your seatbelts?
Hey, listen, Mrs. Kellerman, did I tell you the plan?
No. What is the plan, Mr. Kellerman?
Tonight's fun-filled agenda prepared during my last 9 lunch hours. 7:05, arrive Kennedy Airport. 7:45, check into our lavish, all-paid-for, deluxe suite at the world-famous Waldorf Astoria Hotel. More?
More.
Okay. 8:30. Flaming dinner at the star-studded all-expense-account Four Seasons restaurant. More?
More.
Followed by a midnight dance in the Empire Room. Followed by a swift elevator ride up to our perfumed, scented bedroom. Followed by one of the great lovemakers that any out-of-town woman ever encountered. More?
No more. You have an interview at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, shoo-in.
George, it's not possible that they'll turn you down, is it? No, I mean not get the job.
What? I've already been approved. The interview tomorrow is just a formality. Just stop worrying. Huh?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Endicott.
This is it. I can smell the meal from here.
We just received information from Kennedy Approach that we run into a traffic problem here.
15 aircraft ahead of us in a holding pattern. So if you'll just sit back and relax, we'll just circle over the New York area until we get the go-ahead. I would guess about 20 to 30 minutes. Thank you.
What does he mean he guesses? Shouldn't he know? He's a pilot. He shouldn't guess. Oh, wait. Miss? Oh, miss?
But we still have plenty of time, George.
Miss Stewardess, is there any chance that it'll be more than 30 minutes? We have an 8:30 dinner reservation. My wife is worried that we'll be late.
Well, I don't guess it'll be more than 20 or 30 minutes.
That's what the pilot guessed.
His guess is better than mine. Last call for coffee.
George, you think I could have a cup
of... Is this unusual? I mean, does this happen very often?
At Kennedy? Almost every night this time. It's called the stacking hour.
Oh.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Well, they should have told us at the airport.
No, it's not her fault, George.
They should let you know before you take off. An hour and 20 minutes flying, 30 minutes stacking. Then I would have known it's going to be an hour and 50 minutes flying and stacking.
You're going to have trouble with your stomach, George. I'd see it coming.
The plane circles over New York. Small wisps of cloud pass the window as George checks his watch.
Okay, it's over 30 minutes, almost 35 minutes. Hope he's a better pilot than a guesser. Miss?
Feels like we're going down.
Can you see the airport?
No, I don't see anything. It got very foggy.
It's not fog, it's thick clouds. They fly through this all the time. There's nothing wrong.
Yes, sir?
Is there anything wrong? I mean, it's over 35 minutes now.
I imagine we've run into some bad weather.
You don't have to imagine. Just look out the window. See, we have an 8:30 dinner reservation.
Would you excuse me?
And it's been...
Miss,
probably telling the pilot it's foggy outside. Too busy circling to notice.
You should have eaten something, George.
I'm all right. My seatbelt's too tight.
Inside the cockpit, the captain makes another announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Endicott again.
It seems we've run into a little fog system here not previously reported. Kennedy reports a ceiling under 100 feet, which is below normal for landing. So we'll just have to sit it out up here for a little longer.
You hear that? We're going to sit. We held, we circled, now we're going to sit. Oh, miss, where's Miss? Miss.
Might as well relax. Last time this happened, we circled 2.5 hours.
You mean this has happened to you before?
Either it's traffic or fog or snow or a labor dispute at the control tower. I figure just circling, I'm 2 years older than I should be. Relax.
You hear that? At 8:30 tonight, we'll be circling over the Four Seasons restaurant.
Oh, it's not important, George. We can eat later in the room. In the meantime, do you think that I could have a cup of coffee?
George nods. He looks around for the stewardess, then gets up from his seat.
Yes, sir, may I?
My wife would like a cup of coffee, please.
I'm awfully sorry, sir. The coffee's gone.
Well, if you remember, we haven't eaten anything. Is it possible to make some more?
We're not allowed to have the burners on during landing.
Yes, but we're not landing. We're circling.
We are circling prior to landing.
Yes, but if we keep circling and circling, that's not circling, that's flying. Is it possible to make coffee during flying?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Endicott again. We're starting to encounter a little turbulence. Will you please take your seats and keep your seat belts fastened?
Just have a Coke or a glass of milk.
I'm awfully sorry, sir. It's a federal regulation. We are not permitted to serve beverages during takeoff or landing. Would you like a glass of water?
Isn't water a beverage?
Sir, if you would like to discuss this with the senior stewardess.
No! I'd like to discuss it with the Federal Aviation Authority, which I plan to do as soon as we're through sitting and holding and circling.
Sir, would you take your seat? And observe the no smoking sign?
Yeah, I observed it.
The plane continues circling as the daylight begins to fade. Some of the passengers have settled down to sleep, while others sit quietly reading. George checks his watch again.
Do you know what time it is?
It's not important, George.
8:40. Means by the time I get into New York, check into the room and go to a restaurant, it'll be 11:30. I eat that late, I'm usually up all night.
You're anticipating, George. You won't be up all night.
Maybe we'll be sitting up here. This thing could be the Flying Dutchman. Spend the rest of our lives circling over New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Endicott again.
I don't want to hear this.
I'm sorry to report that ground control sees no easing up in the weather conditions here, and appears that Kennedy will be closed for the night. The same applies to Newark, LaGuardia, and Philadelphia. So it looks like we're going to have to proceed to Boston. You may smoke again if you like. Thank you.
We're going to Boston. I have to be in New York at 9 o'clock in the morning, and tonight I'm going to Boston.
It's chaos at the Boston baggage reclaim as people push and shove to get to the front and grab their passing luggage. The airport is crammed full of passengers from diverted flights. George and Gwen squeeze through the sea of people as they head towards the luggage carousel.
All right. Excuse me. Gwen. Here.
Here's the stubs. Here, you pick up the bags. I'll go see if there's another flight going out, and I'll meet you in front of the mailboxes as soon as you're through.
George, shouldn't we eat something first?
We can eat later. There's no time now. I gotta get to New York. I'll meet you in front of the mailboxes. Goodbye.
All right.
Brandon International Airways, flight 543 for Dallas and El Paso, now ready for departure at gate 25.
Sorry, Kennedy is closed for the night. There are no flights going into New York.
Well, they open again.
Operation should resume at 7 a.m. We cannot make any guarantees.
Wait, what about trains? Are there any trains going tonight?
You'll have to check South Station for that.
Mr. Howard, leave. Please report to the United Flight.
Quinn stands patiently at the baggage reclaim, waiting for their luggage to appear.
American Airlines asks jet flight number 3 non-stop to Los Angeles, departing at...
George looks for a vacant phone booth. A man steps out of one and announces information on the train service.
Last train to New York from South Station in 20 minutes. It's in at 2 a.m.
Forget it. They'll never make it.
I gotta make it.
Miss Hazel Marshall, please report to the United Flight Information Company.
Gwen, not looking very happy, meets George at the mailboxes.
Gwen! Train leaving in 20 minutes. Where are the bags?
They can't find them.
Oh, I hope they got a dining car because we're going to have to eat on. They can't find what?
The bags. They can't find the bags.
Our bags? What do you mean they can't find our bags?
I can't say it simpler than that, George. They can't find the bags.
They lost our luggage.
Do not shout at me.
They lost our luggage?
They didn't lose it. They just can't find it. Oh. They'll find it.
Well, suppose they don't find it.
Well, then it's lost.
I just said that. Come on. We got 20 minutes to find our lost luggage.
Passengers arriving on flight 347 may now place their luggage at the United Baggage Area.
Excuse me.
They hurry back to the baggage reclaim area.
Excuse me.
Just a minute.
You don't understand. I've only got 20 minutes to catch a train. You people seem to have lost my bags.
A large brown one and a small gray one.
Yeah, well, you don't have to describe them, dear. We got the claim checks.
What do they look like?
A large brown one and a small gray one. Could you hurry, please? We've only got 20 minutes.
You don't see them here?
Well, of course we don't see them here. Why would we ask you if we saw them here?
All right, Mr. It's not going to help to get excited.
Yeah, well, it's not going to hurt you. Look, what's the difference if I get excited as long as I get my bags?
This man is trying to help, George.
He's helping me not get excited. He's not helping me get my bags. Well, we're going to miss the train.
Can I see your claim checks?
It's a large brown one and a small gray one.
You should have carried the little one.
There's two bags.
That's right. Two bags, both lost.
A large brown one and a small gray one.
And you didn't see him come out?
I wasn't here. My wife didn't see him come out.
I didn't see him come out.
No, I don't see him here.
Well, I can see you don't see that. Is there somebody else that I can talk to?
Right, lost and found.
Well, not yet. We just found out they
were
lost.
Will you let me handle this? How could we? We just found out they were lost.
All I can suggest is lost and found.
Right. Well, then what are you doing looking at my claim checks? Why didn't you just say try lost and found instead of reading my claim checks?
He's trying to help
me. He wasn't helping. He was just reading. What's your name?
Vito.
Yeah? Well, if you don't find him, I'm suing you people for losing my bags, missing the train. What kind of a way is this to run an airline?
And you say you didn't see the bags come out?
Gonna read the claim checks again. I got 12 minutes to catch a train.
There's no cause for alarm, Mr.
Tell us the difference what my name is. We're just gonna waste time discussing my name. Oh, Kellerman. George Kellerman. All right, there's 10 seconds gone discussing my name. Now, in 11 minutes, the most important train of my life is gonna pull out of South Station. We're standing here talking about my name.
Well, let me say, first of all, Mr. Kellerman, that TIA certainly assumes all responsibility for
Los Angeles. I don't want your responsibility. I just want my clean shirts. I got a business meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Yes, my husband has an important business meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow
I just
morning.
Said that, Gwen. What are you wasting time telling what I just said?
Well, we'd be glad to put you up in a hotel in Boston tonight, and you can make our 7 a.m. flight to New York in the morning.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Wait, supposing New York is still fogged in?
Well, we can't guarantee the weather, of course.
You can't guarantee a large gray suitcase and a small brown one.
It's a large brown one and a small
And what's gray. The difference what color they are if they're lost?
Well, I see no reason to assume it won't show up.
I saw no reason to assume I wouldn't be in New York tonight, and I'm in Boston looking for baggage that you assume isn't lost.
Is something wrong?
Yes, my husband has an ulcer, and his medicine is in the assumed
Come on. We'll be at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. I don't get my baggage by tomorrow morning. Tomorrow afternoon, your lawyers are going to hear from my lawyers. You got my name right?
Yes, sir. Kellerman. Frank Kellerman.
George Kellerman. You see, first you waste my time because I try to get my name right, and then you get my name wrong. George.
Thank you.
God, first they lose my baggage, then they're going to send it to some not named Frank Kellerman. You're going to hear from me if I don't hear from you.
George continues ranting at the man through the window.
Attention, please. Last call. Brandon International Airways, flight 543.
Taxi!
Yeah.
South Station, step on it. We got 10 minutes to catch a train.
South Station's 15 minutes from here.
Can't you make it in 10?
How can I make it in 10 minutes if it's a 15-minute drive? You want to go to South Station? I'll take you to South Station, but you're not going to make it in 10 minutes. I don't want to get killed missing a train.
Is it necessary to take 2 minutes telling me you can't make it in 10 minutes? Just get me to South Station. You can talk all you want after I'm on the train. I don't believe it.
The taxi speeds through the late evening traffic.
Don't worry, we'll make it.
I'm not worried.
I am.
I tell you, 15 minutes.
You having a bag? No bag. Did we miss the 10:20 to New York?
They held it up 5 minutes. If you hurry, you can make it.
Yeah, you see? How much is that?
$1.75. That's a $20 bill.
Yeah, I know. Can I have a change, please?
I can't break a $20 bill. I just got on duty. Don't you have a five?
If I had a five, why would I give you the $20? You got a $5 bill?
In the whole Grayson case.
A $20 bill is all I got.
Well, you'll have to change it inside. I'll wait for you.
I got a train pulling out now.
About my $1.75?
Give me your name and address, and I'll mail you the money.
I'll keep the $20. I'll mail you the change.
George Kellerman, 1174 Willow Tree Lane, Twin Oaks, Ohio, and keep a quarter tip, huh?
Right.
Now, you got it?
I got it. You said keep a quarter tip.
No, you got the address. The address.
You got it, George. Come on.
George runs through the station, dragging Gwen by the hand behind him. They run alongside a carriage stopped in the station looking for the entrance. They finally get on board and find the carriage completely empty, with the exception of a cleaning lady who is busy sweeping up the litter on the floor.
Is this the 10:20 to New York?
No, that is.
A packed carriage on the next track slowly pulls away from the station.
Hello?
George and Gwen race back the way they came and round the back of the carriage to the next track, just in time to catch the glow of the red rear lights on the departing train disappearing into the darkness.
I didn't see that train. Did you see that train?
I didn't see anything. I was running.
There goes the New York job.
Oh, George, you can call them in the morning and explain what happened. I don't understand.
That I lost my luggage, that I got on an empty train. You think they're going to give a person like that a job of responsibility?
Well, you're not to blame because the plane had to land in Boston.
I could have caught an earlier plane, couldn't I?
Well, yes, you could have caught an earlier plane.
You see, it was my job and my responsibility to be in that office at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
George.
You're right. I don't deserve the New York job.
Missed
it, huh? George, is there time for me to go to the ladies' room?
Well, where are we going? We're here in Boston for the night. We missed the train. Dear old Boston. I don't suppose there's another train to New York tonight.
No, but you can get that one in Longview.
What?
It's the next station. They stop 10 minutes to pick up mail in the Boston papers. If you get a cab, take you down there in 25 minutes, you'll make it.
Why didn't you tell me this before my wife left?
Didn't know she was leaving.
Gwen!
George runs through the cafeteria at the station looking for the ladies' toilets. He stops and asks a cleaning lady.
Oh. Excuse me. Where's the ladies' room?
You mean the men's room?
No, I don't want the men's room. I want the ladies' room.
Over there.
Oh, thank you.
He knocks on the door marked ladies' room.
Gwen! We can still make the train! Gwen! Let's go to the ladies' room.
He grabs hold of the cleaning lady.
Miss? Miss? My wife is in there. She just went in. Could you get her out, please, and just make it quickly, because it's a matter of life and death. Gwen!
Gwen spots George outside the ladies' room.
Oh, George, I couldn't find the ladies' room. There it is.
Well, never mind. Wait, that. We can make the train.
You didn't want to come out. Me.
I beg your pardon. Oh. Take her back in. Run, Gwen. Run.
He grabs Gwen's hand and they run back to where the taxi dropped them off earlier.
Take her back. Run, Gwen. Didn't make it, eh?
I did. Oh, can you get us to Longview in 20 minutes?
Now for another quarter tip. All right.
The taxi takes off at speed through the dark city streets.
just made it. You better rush.
How much is that?
$4.50, but I still can't bring the 20.
All right, that's $2 from before, plus $4.50 is $6.50, plus a dollar tip is $7.50. That's $12.50. You still got to mail me. You got the address?
Twin Oaks, Ohio, 1174 Kellerman Lane.
No, I'm Kellerman. Willow Tree Lane, 1174 Willow Tree Lane.
He hasn't got it. All he's got is my $20. I don't get my $12.50, you'll get a hit from me!
Bonnie Polish at 391 Clancy Street, Boston, Massachusetts, zip code 02124!
George catches his breath on the carriage steps as the train pulls out of the station.
He said, Betty or Bernie?
They walk through a narrow corridor into the carriage. It's full to capacity, with every seat taken, and passengers even standing in the walkway between the seats. George speaks with the ticket collector on the train.
Excuse me, are there any seats in this train? Huh? Oh. Well, don't you have anything in the parlor car or a compartment or anything? I'll pay for it.
This train runs empty 6 nights a week, except when the New York airport is fogged in. Then they fly him up to Boston, and we could use 4 more cars.
Well, why don't you put on 4 more cars?
Ain't got 4 more cars. Nobody takes the train anymore. Everybody is in a hurry.
You expect us to stand all the way to New York?
Not unless you give me $11 each.
Is there a dining car?
Just sandwiches and drinks. The next car forward.
They struggle through the dining car, which is as congested as the rest of the train.
Two, please.
Just two?
Yes, just two.
Me and my wife.
Into the line, please. Next car.
Why does it say just two? We've got to get in line.
Pardon me.
They push through to the next carriage and squeeze past the people in the long line for the dining car.
Excuse me, please.
They follow the queue to the end of the carriage and out of the door. George speaks with a man who appears to be the last in the line.
Are you the end of the line for the dining car?
No, looks like you are.
George stands at the top of the steps at the open entrance to the carriage and breathes deeply.
George?
It's fine, fine, just a little pain. It hurts. I know what you're thinking. I should have had the stale chicken on the plane.
I wasn't thinking that.
A middle-aged Oriental couple get up from their table in the dining car. The head waiter directs George and Gwen to the empty seats.
You can take those two right there. Know how long we were in line?
2 hours.
2 hours, that's how long.
Chicken sandwich and coke.
Can we see a menu, please?
We just got sandwiches and drinks.
Oh. Hey, 2 chicken sandwiches, please.
Sorry, no chicken.
Isn't that chicken?
Yeah, that's chicken. And when he eats that, that's the end of the chicken.
They're out of chicken, George.
Got ham or cheese?
No ham.
Just cheese.
No cheese.
No cheese.
What do you have?
Peanut butter on white bread.
What else you got?
More peanut butter on white bread. Ran out of everything a few minutes ago, ma'am.
Don't you have anything else? My husband isn't allowed to eat peanut butter or white bread.
I got saltine crackers and green olives. That's all, ma'am. We didn't expect 350 people tonight. No, ma'am.
All right. If I bring my wife the peanut butter sandwich, I'm going to have the crackers and olives.
And one coffee and one milk.
Sorry, ma'am. No coffee, no milk.
No milk. No milk.
I got tonic water and clam juice, but they ain't cold.
Do you want the clam juice?
Warm? With crackers and olives?
Never mind the drinks.
Yes, ma'am. Is that separate checks?
No, I'll pay the whole thing.
Yes, sir.
I was going to take you to dinner at one of the best restaurants in the world. Here you are eating peanut butter on white bread with nothing to drink. If you ever get your mouth open again, I wouldn't blame you if you never talked to me.
Oh, my God.
What's wrong?
I lost my left eyelash.
They finally arrive at New York.
Are you sure?
What do you mean, am I sure? I should know if I swallowed an olive pit or not, shouldn't I? An empty stomach, I could rip right through my insides.
How could you swallow an olive pit?
Yawning with my mouth full, that's how.
Yes, well, if you don't eat and you don't sleep, you have to expect accidents like that. Come on, we'll get a cab and go to the hotel.
I'm suing all of them. I don't care if I'm in court all year.
A large clock in the station reads 2:10. George and Gwen wind their way through the crowded station. George spots a porter and asks for directions.
Excuse me. Can you tell me where the taxi stand is?
Right out those doors.
Oh.
But you won't find no taxis there.
Why not?
They're on strike.
A taxi strike?
And everything's strike. They're all out. Taxis, subways, buses, the whole transit system. The sanitation trucks, too.
Well, how are people getting around?
Well, there's no strike on walking.
How far is it to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel?
About 8 blocks from here.
Look, I remember where it is. How can a big city like this have a transit strike?
Well, Ken, George, let's just walk, all right?
I never heard of such a thing with no buses, trains, taxis.
Outside in the street, the rain is pouring down.
Maybe it'll stop soon.
Maybe.
2:15, I don't think it's going to stop.
Ever?
I can't stand here all night. I don't get some food and some sleep. I'll never make that meeting tomorrow morning.
Well, I don't mind getting a little wet, George.
Huh?
Oh, which way do we go?
50th and Park. That way.
George does up his jacket and Gwen pulls her coat tight around her neck. They cross the deserted, rain-drenched street. They hurry along the pavement, alongside mountains of neatly stacked plastic bags full of rubbish. Gwen uses her handbag to shield her head from the heavy rain. She stops in a shop doorway.
You know I have weak ankles.
Well, the sooner we get there, the less wet we'll be.
Where are we now?
He looks at the street sign.
39th and Park.
And where was Grand Central?
42nd Street.
And the hotel's at 50th?
Yes.
Doesn't that mean we're walking the wrong way, George?
It's been 4 years since I've been here. They used to mark the streets better.
They head back in the right direction. The piles of rubbish appear to be increasing in size.
What do you stop it for?
Whoa, look at that!
That's garbage. You've seen garbage before.
Oh, not that much in one place.
There's a strike on. It's not always like this. Park Avenue's one of the cleanest streets in the world.
The rubbish starts to slide down from the top of the pile.
Oh, who's going to clean all that up?
When you stop worrying about everyone's garbage and come on. What's the matter?
I stepped on a bottle.
Huh?
I stepped on a bottle. I broke my heel on my shoe.
How did you do that?
By stepping on a bottle and breaking the heel of my shoe, George.
Well, can you walk?
Yeah, I can walk, but not fast. You know I have weak ankles.
Oh.
Eventually, they arrive at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Dripping wet, they enter the hotel through the revolving door. Gwen squeezes some water out of her coat.
George, I don't want to complain, but my ankles are buckling.
Clench your toes when you walk.
The huge and beautifully appointed reception area in the hotel is again full of people. Many are asleep on the sumptuous sofas. Others quietly read newspapers and magazines. One man seems to be sleeping while standing up. George and Gwen approach the reception desk.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Mr. and Mrs. Kellerman, Twin Oaks, Ohio. We finally got here.
Did you have a reservation?
Yeah, made by the Drexel Company through the Hilton Reservation Service.
In Twin Oaks, Ohio.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You must be pretty busy putting people up in the lobby.
Oh, it's the least we could do. With this transit strike, most of them have no way to get home. And there's not a room in the city tonight.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Oh, here we are.
George Kellerman?
That's it. Yeah, I hope you got a big, nice, dry bed.
And a drugstore open. I have to get an eyelash and tape for my ankle.
Mr. Kellerman, this is for the 17th.
Yeah, right.
This is Thursday, the 18th.
You're not telling me you didn't hold the room for me.
We always hold the room, except when otherwise indicated. Your reservation indicates hold until 10 p.m. It's now 3:05. We had 1,000 requests if you had wired or called.
I couldn't wire a call. I was circling and running.
As I say, we always hold the room unless otherwise indicated. Now, as you can see for yourself, your reservation clearly indicates hold until 10 p.m.
Because I thought I'd be here by 8 p.m. I didn't know then I was going to fly to Boston and then take a cattle car to New York and then have to walk in a hurricane from Grand Central Station. Will you verify that to this man, Gwen?
I can verify that.
Yes, and we didn't expect this transit strike. As I said, if you indicated hold until arrival, or if you had wired or called...
You've already said it 3 times. Meanwhile, I'm dripping all over your lobby with an olive pit in my empty stomach. And my wife is shivering and limping with weak ankles. If I don't get a room, you and your hotel are fourth on my list to be sued. Now, I want to see some action.
Can you wait here just a second, sir?
Where do you think I'm going to go in the middle of a monsoon? My wife is in very bad shape, tell him.
I'm in very bad shape.
Don't worry, I'll straighten this whole thing out. Gotta give us a room.
I hope so.
Mr. Kellerman, I just spoke to Mr. Brutzi, the assistant manager.
Yes. Is Brutzi, huh?
Yes, he says he's awfully sorry for this misunderstanding.
Yeah, well, that's better.
Unfortunately, we don't have a single room available.
I see. Would you please put your full name and Mr. Brutzi's name down on a piece of paper? I'll need it for the trial. This is my wife, Mrs. Kellerman. She's a witness to everything that went on here. Gwen, after he puts his name down here, I want you to sign it with the date and the exact time of day. I may be just a wet, insignificant out-of-towner, but you people took up with the wrong person.
Is there a drugstore open?
Not until the morning. There's one a few blocks from here. If there's anything wrong, I can send the boy.
Don't let him send anybody. It'll weaken the case. I happen to have a stomach disorder that has been further aggravated by you people not giving me a room. And my lawyer's going to have all of this information first thing in the morning, along with a doctor's report about my stomach and my wife's ankles.
I started to say, sir, we have 2 airline pilots in room 819. They're checking out at 7 a.m. You can have that room at no charge.
7 o'clock? I won't be dry until 8. I wouldn't settle this for less than $1 million.
Where? What are we going to do?
Will you come on?
What are we going to do?
I thought you had a plan. Why did you say, let's get out of here?
To prove to him I mean business. Just because we're from out of town doesn't mean they can shove us around.
He's right, George. We should have wired or called.
How can you stand there dripping all over their lap? Their lobby with no heel, no luggage, and tell me that it's my fault that we lost the room.
It's not your fault, George. I'm just suggesting that we sit in the lobby and have coffee until 7 o'clock and then take their room. What else can we do?
Don't panic. I got you through all right up to here. Just don't panic.
Mr. Kellerman?
Huh?
Can I see you a moment, please?
Well, I tell you, you call that bluff name pretty fast, huh?
George walks back to the reception desk with a smug look on his face.
This is for you.
The desk clerk hands George a telephone.
Yes? Mr. Kellerman, this is TIA in Boston.
Did you find my luggage?
Yes, sir, we did. Do you have your claim checks, B-63 and 64?
B-63 and 64. Where are they? Would you repeat that? Oh, hi... My bags are in Ohio.
As clear as I can make out, they were the last ones checked through when they had the power failure, and the conveyor belt must have stopped before your bags were put on the plane. They're putting them on our Star Class Flight 101, and they should be at your hotel before 8.
Oh, good. I hope they enjoy the flight, because I won't be at my hotel at 8, because my hotel gave away my room, for which my hotel is going to be sued in court by my lawyer. Look, I want my bags put on a plane now, and I want them right here where I am, not where I was before you didn't get me there. Here. You understand? My wife will verify that.
Well, then I can verify that.
Mr. Kellerman, there are no flights taking off now. New York is still fogged in.
Well, you flew me through the fog. How come suddenly you're worried about 2 leather valises? What's your name? Huh? No. Just your name.
Robinson.
Robinson. And your first name, Mr. Robinson?
Clifford. All right, Mr. Clifford Robinson. My golf partner's brother-in-law happens to be with the Federal Aviation Boys in Washington, D.C. He'll be getting a telegram tomorrow morning from a sick man in New York whose medicine is in his luggage on a conveyor belt in Twin Oaks, Ohio. Thanks very much, Mr. Robinson.
Am I going to get a room or not?
As I said, if you had wired or called or...
You hear that? Anything happens to that woman, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes. Hey,
can I have your name, please? Winkler.
Winkler. You're going to hear from me, Winkler. Come on, go ahead.
Come on. You're perfectly welcome to stay in the manager's office until 7 o'clock.
There's got to be a hotel room somewhere in the city. Don't worry, I'll straighten this whole thing out. They got to give us a room.
Got a dime?
I told you, in the little gray suitcase.
Save your money. There's not a room to be had. You folks from out of town?
Ohio, Twin Oaks.
How long do you need a room for?
Huh?
How long do you need a room for?
Just overnight. I got a big business meeting tomorrow. Why?
The smartly dressed stranger gestures George and Gwen over to him.
A friend of mine runs a little hotel about two blocks from here. Nothing fancy, mind you, but clean. If you want a room, it'll cost you $10.
Well, $10? That's not expensive for a room.
The $10 is for me. The room will cost you $20.
Where's the hotel?
I don't see the $10.
Yeah. Where is it?
The Ashmont. 51st between Lexington and 3rd. Tell Dave that Murray sent you.
Murray walks away.
I may be from Ohio, but I was born 42 years ago. How do I know that there's going to be a room or a Dave or a Hotel Ashmont?
No one trusts anyone anymore. Well, all right, come on. I got an umbrella. I'll take you there myself and get you the room.
Well, no, you don't have to do that. Just give me the number and I'll call.
No, you don't trust me. I'll take you there. It's only a block away. Look. If you want the $10 back, it's no skin off my nose. I don't have a big business meeting in the morning.
Murray holds out the $10 bill in his hand.
As I said, it's nothing fancy, but it's clean.
George and Gwen huddle together under Murray's umbrella.
This is very decent of you. I'm sorry I was suspicious before.
It's just that we've had such a terrible time, but we really do appreciate this.
I told you what we've been through. You wouldn't believe it.
You're the first good thing that's happened to us all day.
Hold it. What's wrong?
Put your hands up.
Oh, my God.
Against that wall. Don't make a sound.
Oh, my God. We're being held up. It's a hold up. We're being held up.
That roll of bills you got in your right-hand pocket. Move quickly.
I knew it.
George, give him the money, please. Yeah. My God, my children.
Come on.
I knew it. I could see it coming. I went right with him.
You got a wallet?
No wallet. Just the cash. I never carry a wallet.
Give him your wallet, George. It's in his left pocket. Please don't hit him. My husband is a sick man. Please.
All right, start walking down the block slowly and don't turn around.
Yes, we'll do that. We'll walk slowly and we won't turn around.
Will you please leave me a few dollars for a room and something to eat? My wife's got a busted heel.
Yeah, it's tough all over, man. Start walking.
Walk, George, walk.
Don't turn around. At least leave me the umbrella.
You're turning, George. He said don't turn.
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, hold up. We were in a holdup. We might have been killed.
It would have been quicker. This way we'll starve to death. What did you have to tell him about the wallet for?
Would you rather be found dead in the gutter with a bullet through your head and two small children in Ohio?
You know what I got in my pocket, huh? 1, 2, 3, 4 cents. 4 pennies. That's it. 2 cents for you and 2 cents for me. You have to tell him about the wallet.
We're alive, aren't we? I'm shaking, George. You see that? I'm shaking all over. I'm going to have to sit down. I need a cup of coffee or a drink. That's
for what? 4 cents? A cup of coffee and a... 37,000 policemen in the city of New York! Not one will come out in the rain!
At the police station.
Excuse me. My wife and I are from out of town. We got here about an hour ago.
1 second, mister.
We were held up outside of the Waldorf...
1 second, George.
Right. Well, they just settled a sanitation strike. But the milk trucks just went out.
We were held up outside of the Waldorf...
You mean the children won't be able to get any milk?
Gwen, please. We were just held up outside of the Waldorf Astoria.
A man had a gun. We could have been killed.
Name?
Murray. His first name is Murray.
No, he means our name, George.
Kellerman. George and Gwendolyn Kellerman.
Gwen is just fine.
Well, this is for the records. He wants the official name. Anyhow, we were coming out of the Waldorf Astoria.
Where are you staying in New York?
Nowhere. I mean, we were just wandering around in the rain. That's how we got robbed.
Don't the hospitals even have any milk?
Will you stop worrying about the milk?
You came here without a hotel reservation?
Well, we had one, but New York was fogged in and they flew us to Boston. And by the time we got back here, they gave our room away.
You should have wired or called.
I'm not here to discuss that part. I'm here to discuss the part about the guy who took my wallet.
He was taking us to the Hotel Ashmont at 51st Street.
There isn't any hotel.
And we know that.
Then why were you going there with him?
We didn't know it then. We found out about it when the man took my $110.
All right. Sign this and see Captain Mulligan.
But why do I have to see Captain Mulligan if I'm talking to him?
Just sign the form, George.
But I don't want to sign the form. I want my wallet. Where's Captain Mulligan?
1 second, mister.
Why doesn't anyone help anybody?
Do you want me to sign the form?
No, I don't want you to sign the form. Is there any... Can you tell me where Captain Mulligan is?
Second door on the right. 10 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, tomorrow morning? What about tonight?
My husband has a business appointment in the morning.
My handbag was just stolen. I want to report a stolen handbag.
Excuse me, ma'am. I'm reporting a stolen wallet.
That's my third stolen handbag this year. When are you people going to do something about it?
As soon as they take care of my wallet. Is there anybody aside from Captain Mulligan?
Mister, every cop in the city is busy tonight. Now, what's your problem, lady?
What happened to my
car? They took my bag 10 feet away from the police station.
Isn't that terrible?
Well, what are you talking to her for? What about us?
What time did this happen, lady?
5 minutes ago.
Can I have your name, Sergeant?
I screamed, but no one listened.
Sergeant, could I have your name, please?
Kovalevsky. Sergeant Kovalevsky.
Uh-huh. How am I going to buy food? How am I going to eat?
I know what you're going through.
What about what we're going through?
Look, mister, there's not much we can do tonight. Huh?
Yeah.
Where can we get in touch with you in New York?
Right here. We got no place to go.
He was a big man. He was about 6 feet tall.
So was ours. Our crook was 6 feet also.
No, he wasn't. He was shorter.
He was, George. He was 6 feet.
You got a broken heel. Everybody looks bigger to you.
I broke my heel on garbage.
Isn't that terrible?
Look, I've got no place to sleep. I've got no money. I want to know what the city intends to do about this.
You're not going to do anything?
Well, why don't you go up to the armory on 66th and Park? The National Guard's put up some army cuts there until the strike is over. And you can get some hot coffee and donuts.
Oh, that'll be nice.
I don't want hot coffee and donuts. I want my money and my wallet.
Myers, run these people up to the armory.
On the way over, maybe they could look for my handbag.
Follow me, folks.
Come on, George. At least we'll be able to get some sleep.
Well, cots, did you ever sleep on army cots?
Oh, lower your voice.
You want to sign this form on the bottom, lady?
I'm through carrying pocketbooks in this city. You got a pocketbook, you're a marked woman.
George and Gwen sit in silence on the back seat of the patrol car.
You folks live out of town? You folks live out of town?
Oh, yes.
You're lucky.
I'm falling asleep. I won't make it to the armory.
My husband and I haven't eaten or slept since yesterday morning.
Gwen? Don't let me fall asleep without eating. I'll never wake up again.
George's head tilts back and he drifts off to sleep.
5743 Myers. About 63rd and 3rd. Well, we got two people. We're taking up the armory. Right. Pull up, Benny. Change of plans. I'm sorry, folks, but you'll have to get out here.
Is this the armory?
About 8 blocks from here. We got a liquor store holed up on 71st and 1st.
But I can't walk. Can't you drop us at the armory?
Lady,
first?
Please cooperate. We have a holdup. We're short of squad cars.
Oh, dear, yes. Come on, George. We have to get out.
Let's get moving, man.
And look, the looters ain't going to wait around.
Come on, mister. Wake up.
Come on, George.
We have to get out and walk.
Come on, mister. We've got a holdup on 71st Street.
Well, can't you catch him later? You're supposed to take us to the armory.
Please don't argue with me.
I was supposed to get protection and transportation from the police department. I want to be protected.
Yeah, we're trying to hurt.
Listen, I'm doing this for your protection. We
George,
don't want you to get hurt.
George, this man is a policeman now. He knows
I
best.
I can't let
don't
everyone push me around forever. It's got to stop sometime. I'm not getting out of the car.
It's your move, man.
71st and 1st.
Officer Myers slams the door shut and gets back in the passenger seat. In the liquor store, the looters carry heavy boxes of drink out to their getaway car. The driver bashes on the security grill as he hears the police car siren. The looters drop the boxes of drink and leave through the back of the store. They race up a narrow alleyway to the front of the shop where the getaway car is parked. The driver is behind the wheel and ready to go. The three looters speed away with a police car hot on their tail.
They're running for it.
All right, let's get them.
Oh, my God, we're going to chase them.
I changed my mind. Let us off.
We can't stop now. I warned you before. They're turning, Vinny.
The two cars squeal around a corner at high speed on the empty city streets. The looters drive up a concrete access ramp with the police car right up behind them.
Listen, the minute this is over, I want both your badge numbers. I'm through being intimidated.
Both cars now head down the ramp and the pursuit continues back on the city streets. The looters turn down a narrow alley between two buildings with a police car closely behind them. As they spill back onto the street, the looters' car goes wide and mounts the pavement and hits a water hydrant, bringing it to an abrupt halt. The looters run from their damaged vehicle and are pursued on foot by the two police officers. They head down a dimly lit footpath. The three men then split up. One tries to climb a railing at the far end of the footpath, but is apprehended before he gets over.
Oh, 4:05. By the time they catch him and book him and bring us back to the armory, it'll be 5:00 before we're in the cots. Why couldn't he have robbed a grocery store? Could have gotten some milk.
They don't have any. They're on strike.
Move it, man! Move it!
The two remaining looters jump into the police car.
Let's get the hell out of here!
Oh, my God. We're being kidnapped.
I'm a business executive from Ohio.
Folks, nice and cool.
The looter points a gun at George. Myers briefly runs after the squad car, but it's soon a long way down the street.
We have nothing to do with this. I'm a businessman on my way to the armory.
We have two small children in Twin Oaks, Ohio, and my husband, he isn't well.
You just drop us off at the next corner. My wife and I give you our oath that we won't bear witness. Gwen, tell him we won't bear witness.
Oh, no, we really, we won't bear witness. No.
The radio in the car starts flashing. The looter in the passenger seat holding the gun picks up the receiver.
Yeah? Who's calling, please?
I'm sorry. He's out to lunch.
This is the butler.
I don't think you're supposed to fool with that thing.
None of our business, George. We're from Ohio. Let the man fool with it.
The car, with its lights flashing, travels at high speed along the empty roads.
All right, let's dump them in the park.
The park? Central Park? At 4:00 in the morning?
Don't argue with them, George. The park will be just fine with us, thank you very much.
They stop the car and George and Gwen get out before it accelerates away into the darkness.
Gwen?
I don't want to discuss it.
You're not mad at me, are you?
I'm not mad at you. I just don't want to discuss it. I lost my shoe getting out of the car.
The police were told to take us to the armory. Anything happens to us, it's their responsibility.
My, that will be a comfort to my orphan children in Ohio. Would you please look for my shoe?
If it wasn't for the fog and all of those strikes, we'd be fed and asleep by now. The Waldorf Astoria, you concede that?
If I were discussing it, I would concede it, but I don't want to discuss it.
Right. Oh, here, look. Car.
Hey! Oh, I hope you get in trouble someday!
There's my shoe.
Huh? Where?
In the road where the car just went over it.
Yeah. Oh. George picks up the flattened shoe and hands it to Gwen.
Well, the heel was broken anyway.
I'm wearing the one with the broken heel.
Oh. What do we do now?
Oh, well, I'm open for suggestions, George.
Well, we can't stay here.
That's a good suggestion. All right, come on.
I don't think taking your shoe off in the dark is a good idea. You'll have to step on something.
Yes, well, I'll just meet that problem when I come to...
What's the matter?
I just came to it.
Oh, I thought that would happen. What is it?
It's sharp, pointy, and painful.
It's the flip part of a flip top can. Slobs in this city.
Is it bleeding?
Ooh, just a little.
But it's bleeding.
Not bad.
But it's bleeding.
Yes, it's bleeding.
Oh, my God, it's bleeding. All right, come on.
You can't walk with a bleeding foot.
Well, I would fly, but New York is fogged in.
And there's no need for sarcasm.
Uh-huh, well, there's no need for bleeding either, but they both came out. George! George, could we please get out of this park?
Yeah, with pleasure.
George, what are you doing? Put me down.
Look, if you bleed, you get an infection. You get an infection, you have to go to the hospital. Only the hospitals are probably on strike like everyone else. Oh, you can't walk, and I'm carrying
you. Oh, George, you haven't eaten for 18 hours.
Well, neither of you. You're not heavy. Don't worry, Gwen. We'll make it.
I'm not worried, George. When did I ever say I was worried? I never said that, did I?
I can't make it, Gwen. I can't make it.
Put me down, George. Put me down.
We can't stop now. We gotta get to the armory so they can get some sleep. Got an interview. 9 o'clock.
You'll rupture yourself, George. You already have an ulcer. Now put me down, please, George.
5 minutes. We just rest 5 minutes.
George, there's no point in going on. Why don't we just try to sleep here?
Here in the open?
But we could go underneath the tree now. We do it with the kids all the time when we go camping.
In a $200 tent with a stove and some steaks and a record player.
George, I can't walk and you can't carry me. And there are no buses or taxis and no car is going to stop to pick up bleeding strangers.
It's not safe in the park at night.
We have already been robbed and kidnapped. We have nothing to lose but 4 cents. Please, George.
Suppose it rains again.
I am so wet now, it can only make me drier.
Well, it'll be light soon anyway. Oh, if I could only close my eyes for a couple of hours.
Oh.
It's drier near the tree, George.
Yeah. Oh, with our luck, we'll probably be attacked in the middle of the night by squirrels.
Keep your body next to mine, George. It's warmer that way. There.
Oh, they're gonna pay for it. A lot of people are gonna pay for this night.
George, don't mumble. You just keep yourself awake.
People were safer in the war. With bombs dropping, they were safer in the war.
Go to sleep, George.
You bet I will.
Good night, George.
Good night, Gwen.
George? What time do you want me to wake you up?
That won't be a problem, I promise you. Go to sleep.
Good night, George.
Good night.
Gwen huddles up tightly behind George underneath a large tree in the park. Someone wearing jeans and a long black cape walks slowly and quietly through the park. They stop and stand over the sleeping bodies of George and Gwen. Gwen senses a presence and opens her eyes. The stranger in a wide-brimmed dark hat and a long ponytail crouches down over them.
Oh, my God.
The sun is shining brightly. George is still asleep, alone, under the tree, without his shoes.
Ow. Ow. My neck. Ow! My neck. Oh. Can't move my neck. Gwen?
Ow!
Gwen? Where are you, Gwen? Gwen! Ow! Gwen? Where are you?
He scurries around the trees and bushes looking for Gwen.
Gwen!
Breakfast! I found Cracker Jack on a bench!
Gwen, wearing George's shoes, runs towards him, waving a half-eaten packet of Cracker Jacks.
Get out!
Hey, dog, get out! Hey, dog, get out!
No, he's stalking. He's hungry, George. You can't have it. It's our breakfast.
Boy, dog!
Boy! George!
A large black and white dog snatches the packet of Cracker Jacks from Gwen's hand. They both chase the dog through the park. It eventually stops and begins to eat the contents of the packet under a small ornamental bridge. The dog runs off, leaving the remains of the packet of Cracker Jacks on the floor. George picks up the soggy carton.
Dog should have been on a leash. There's no excuse for that. No excuse.
Oh, I would have caught him, but I couldn't... And run past in your shoes.
Is your foot all right?
It's better, but it's not all right.
Oh.
What's that?
Oh, dog's collar came off. Corky. Owner, Mrs. Nancy Silverberg. Okay, Corky, Mrs. Silverberg. Attention, Board of Health.
There's still a little left, George. Why don't you eat it?
You sure it's all right? I mean, you found it in a bench. A dog's been at it.
Oh, no, it's got dextrose and corn syrup and niacin. You need the energy, George. You eat it. Yeah. Thank you.
I was thinking, you could have been having your breakfast in bed this morning, huh? Orange juice and eggs and sausages and buttered toast with... marmalade and a pot full of hot coffee. Instead, you've eaten 12 Cracker Jack and a dog left over in an underpass in Central Park at exactly... Where's my watch?
What?
Where's my watch?
Don't get excited, George.
I'm not excited. Where's my watch?
It just all happened so quickly.
What happened so quickly?
You said you wouldn't get excited.
But that's before you said it all happened so quickly. Where's my watch?
I gave it to a man in a black cape while you were sleeping.
My watch? You gave my $200 watch to a man in a black cape. Why?
Because it looked like he had a knife under the black cape. That's why I told you it all happened so quickly.
Why didn't you wake me up?
Because I didn't want you to get knifed by a man in a black cape.
You mean to tell me that I was mugged while I was sleeping by a man in a cape? I don't believe that.
You were robbed while walking with a man with an umbrella. You believed that, didn't you?
He didn't ask for any money?
Well, he didn't say anything. He just took the watch and ran.
You mean he didn't ask you for the watch? You just gave it to him?
I had to. He had a knife under the cape.
Did you see the knife?
A man doesn't stand over you at 4 o'clock in the morning in a cape if he doesn't have a knife, does he?
I don't know. It never came up before.
I don't want to discuss it. Here are your shoes,
Gwen. I don't want my shoes. You wear them.
I don't have an interview at 9 o'clock. You wear your shoes.
I don't have a watch. I don't know what 9 o'clock is. I don't need the shoes.
Oh. I don't want to wear or discuss your shoes. Eat your Cracker Jack.
He throws a handful of Cracker Jack into his mouth.
Oh. I'm sorry, George. I guess I must be a little irritable. I am sorry about your watch. George, I was thinking... We could go to the Traveler's Aid Society. They lend money to people who are stranded. We could find out where the office is and we could walk right over there. What do you think, George? George, what do you think?
I think I just busted her tooth.
Oh! On the Cracker Jack?
We must have swallowed the prize. I don't know, it felt like a little tin toy.
Let me see.
Right in the front of my mouth, the front. There goes my smile.
Oh, let me look. Maybe it's not busted.
Oh, I can feel it with my tongue. It's busted.
Can I look? Maybe it's not busted. You're right. It's busted.
Well, that does it.
Because I can't possibly... If I got money, if I got shaved, if I got my suit pressed, I could never get that job without a smile.
Maybe we could find a dentist he could cap it.
For 4 cents.
We could ask Travelers 8.
They only aid travelers. They don't cap teeth.
I'm just making suggestions now, George.
Here's your shoes. Try to find the Travelers 8 office.
Hear that?
Hear what?
Whistling. I'm whistling through my broken tooth.
I don't hear it.
Oh, yeah,
I
on the yes.
No.
I hear it. It's a whistling sound. You think they're going to give the job to a man who can't smile and who talks with a whistle on his S's? Mm-hmm. Not on your sweet life. So, okay, come on.
They climb a short flight of steps and make their way out of the park.
Look at the sun. Must be 7:30. I'll never make it. Not a chance.
There's still time, George. You mustn't give up.
I'm not giving up. I'm just saying I'll never make it. Giving up is when you can still make it, but you give up.
George, wait a minute.
We can't stop now. Look at the time.
George, listen.
Huh?
Someone crying.
Well, it's none of our business.
Well, maybe someone's in trouble.
Maybe it's the man with the black cape. He doesn't like my watch. Gwen, we got our own troubles.
Oh, George.
What?
Look.
A small boy is sitting all alone on a park bench.
He's alone. Maybe he's lost.
Maybe he's not lost. Maybe he's just alone.
He wouldn't be crying. I'm going to go see.
Oh, now.
My gums weak.
Now.
My heart. What's wrong here? Why all the crying? Where's your mommy and daddy? Where
Gwen.
Do you live?
Gwen.
Soy perdido. I killed mommy. Don't you speak English? He doesn't speak English, George.
All right, there's nothing we can do. We'll have to wait until some Spanish-speaking people come by.
We can't just leave him here.
He'll be all right. Give me a broken heel to play with.
Oh, George, the poor thing looks so hungry and frightened. George, you have got to do something.
Me? Me? I chased a dog across Central Park to get a half a box of Cracker Jack. You expect me to feed a strange mouth?
That's right. Go on. Become like everyone else in this city. Don't worry about anybody but yourself. Go. You'll be late for your appointment. Oh, I'll stay here.
It's all right. I'll stay here with you. Don't you worry, little one.
Tell him where you slept last night. Tell him what you had for breakfast. See how safe he feels.
George, I don't know what's happened to you. I've never seen you like this before.
I never saw you wearing my shoes before, but we're in trouble. I've got no money. I've got no luggage. I've got no hope for the future unless I'm at 38th and Park at 9 o'clock this morning. Sharp, clean, and alert. This is no time to be a foster parent.
Yes, well, I'm not going to leave him.
All right.
A thought crosses George's mind. He sits down on the bench next to Gwen and gives her a nudge with his elbow.
See if he's got any money on him.
What?
See if he's got any money in his pockets. Then we can call the Traveler's Aid and they'll send someone to take care of all of us.
You want me to go looking through his pockets for money? A poor little Spanish boy. Is that what
you... If he wants us to help him, he's got to help us. I'll do it.
Suppose somebody sees you...
Well, we just explained to him that the child is lost and we've only got 4 cents. So we were... I see what you mean. I'll do it in the bushes. Come on, little boy. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to look for some money.
George takes the boy behind a large bush.
My name is George and I'm your friend. Your friend, amigo, huh? Now, be a nice little boy. I just want to look in your pocket, see if you have a dime.
You there, what are you doing with that little boy?
Oh, I didn't see you there. There's nothing wrong. I'm a business executive from Ohio. My wife can verify
Take
that.
Take your hands off that little boy.
Oh, no, you have the wrong idea, you see. The child is lost, and I was looking for money because I was mugged last
Officer!
Night by a man
Officer!
In a black cape.
Perfect!
Officer
in the park!
Oh, no, please Perfect! Don't do that. No, Gwen!
Officer!
Gwen, run! Gwen, just do what Perfect I tell you, run!
A park warden on horseback gallops across the grass in pursuit of the fleeing George and Gwen. Despite having a good lead on the warden, the horse quickly begins to gain on them. They run across a large area of grassland and through some trees, then disappear down a steep embankment, at which point the warden gives up with the chase.
Explain.
Explain? When I'm
doing in the bushes with a little boy with my hands in his pockets? They give me 10 to 20 years. I begged you to leave that kid alone.
I did the right thing. That child was scared to death.
Well, right now he's probably eating an ice cream cone and I'm a hunted pervert. We better go out the west side.
I don't think I can move.
You chased a dog and you beat a horse. You're stronger than you think. Come
on. Okay, George, now, I promise I would call the children this morning. If they don't hear from me, they will be worried.
Yeah, right now they're eating a big bowl of Rice Krispies and bananas. Worry about us, will you?
You haven't thought about them once since we left, have you?
Oh.
About their welfare, about their future. If anything should happen to us, have you thought about our children once since we left home?
Yes. Yes!
In between the mugging and the kidnapping. Now, you're going to walk or are we going to stand here and have a PTA meeting?
There's that tone of voice again. Ever since they lost our luggage, you have been sarcastic with me and whining and irritable and insensitive and intolerant. Oh, my God. My ring just came off. I just lost my ring.
Now you lost your ring.
I'm sorry. Next time I'll do it when you're not in such a hurry. Look for my rings.
How could it just slip off?
I haven't had any food. My fingers are thinner.
14 years she hasn't taken a ring off, and now she loses a ring.
I heard that. Don't talk to me in the third person. I'm here in the first person.
I'm not talking to you in the third person. I'm talking to myself in the second person. Anyway, what's the point in wearing a wedding ring when you always wear gloves?
Well, what's the point in wearing socks when you always wear shoes?
What's the point in arguing if my career is over at 9 o'clock?
Go on. Go to your appointment, George. Don't you worry about me. I will just stay here on my hands and knees and scrape and dig down to the bone until
when
I find my ring.
We're running out of time. Now, it's only a $20 band of gold. If I get the job, I'll buy you 100 of them. Forget it.
Forget it?
Yes.
Forget my wedding ring. I don't know. How can you say such a thing, George? How can you be so inhuman? It's my wedding ring. My wedding ring, George. I don't want another one. I want that one. The one you gave me. The one you put on my finger.
Calm down, Gwen. I didn't mean anything by it.
It is the only thing that I own that I really care about. Now, I'm not going to forget it, and I'm not going to leave it. I don't care what you do or where you go.
You're upset.
I'm going to stay. That's right. I'm going to stay here and look for my wedding.
All right. You're tired and you're upset.
Alone,
we're going to. All right.
Just
I promise you, we're not going to go away.
Here.
We're going to stay here until we.
We'll
stay here until we find the ring.
What are you doing,
Are you all right, lady?
That's my husband, George. Are you all right?
Why didn't she say something?
I told you, never help nobody. It doesn't pay.
Speak to me, George.
Time. Begged you to forget that ring.
Where did he hit you, George?
First time in the ribs.
Oh.
Second time in the same place.
Oh. Is it your ribs?
No, my knee. I'm kneeling on your ring.
Oh, for heaven's sake, thank you. Will you look at that? Well, I just feel better already.
Oh. Hoodlums.
They make it to the park exit, where a large rubbish truck makes a start on the mounds of uncollected waste.
Can't you walk any faster?
With no heels and torn shoes, George, I've worn through the bottom of my stocking. I'm down to bare skin.
A bus! There's a bus. A strike must have been. Run, Gwen, run!
We don't have any money,
George. I'm an oracle. They gotta take us.
They cross the busy street. George raises his hand in the air to stop the bus. They get on the bus and it pulls away. A few yards along the street, it stops again. When it drives away, George and Gwen are left standing in the street.
Arthur Fischetti, huh? Well, Mr. Fischetti won't be driving a bus very long, I can promise you that. You should have sat down like I told you. He wouldn't have had the nerve to throw us off. You were sitting. Yelling man is one thing. A sitting woman, that's something else, huh? Why are you standing there?
I'm finished, George. I can't take any more. I have no more strength.
You mean you're just going to stand there forever? At 65th Street and Central Park West?
Until I die or I'm rescued, whichever comes first.
You mean you're giving up after you told me not to give up?
Oh, you have to make your own decisions now, George. I chose giving up.
Oh, come on, Gwen. You've got two children in Ohio to think about. Well, I'm not going to move from this spot until...
What's the matter?
I don't know. Listen.
What is it?
Sounds like a gas main.
George, get off! I'm gonna blow up! Get off! You hear me? Just get off!
As George steps off the cast iron manhole cover, an explosion followed by a cloud of dust blows the cover high into the air. George shields his ears from the loud noise.
George? George, are you all right? George, are you all right?
Gwen stands in front of George. He realizes she is talking but is unable to hear a word. He frantically wiggles his fingers in his ears, but it fails to restore his hearing. Gwen leads him by the arm to some steps at the entrance to a church where they both sit down.
George, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Has the ringing stopped?
He shakes his head while opening his mouth wide and rubbing his ears.
The ringing hasn't stopped, but you can hear me?
Yeah. If you walked when I told you to walk, I wouldn't have been standing there. I can't hear again. Con Edison will pay for this. Say something.
What?
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 Say something. Just anything.
I'm sorry. It wasn't my fault. My ankles were giving out and my knees were beginning to go.
I can only hear every other word. It's like a bad phone connection.
It was the explosion. It'll clear up in a few minutes.
It'll up a minute. That's all I heard.
George, stop it. You are getting me very nervous.
George, it getting nervous. They're not going to give a vice presidency to a man who hears half of everything. We have important meetings. I'm supposed to listen to all of them.
George, do you know where we are?
What? What was the second part?
Where we are now. Do you know where we are now? It's a church.
Oh.
Maybe if we pray very hard, we'll still be able to make it.
Well, how are we going to make it if you stop to pray?
But we need now is hope and courage.
What I need now is a barber and a dentist. Gwen, Gwen!
George follows Gwen into the church. Gwen kneels down in the pews a few rows in from the entrance.
I don't mean to be disrespectful, but of all the times to go to church. Psst. We're closed.
The church is closed?
Yeah. I'm sorry, it's TV rehearsal. We are televising Easter service on Sunday.
Oh, well, my wife just wants to pray for 5 minutes. Won't be long.
Hey, Mac, I understand, but I got my orders from the network. See, it's a closed TV rehearsal. There is no one allowed in this church until 2 o'clock, okay?
Well, you mean to say that my wife and I, who happen to be of this denomination, can't sit here and pray?
Forget it, George. We'll go to another church.
You stay there and keep praying. I'd like to see them stop you.
There is no public praying until 2 o'clock.
We won't need praying at 2 o'clock. We need it now.
Hey, look, Mac, I don't want to argue with you. My orders are to keep everyone out of this church until 2 o'clock, okay? Until things are set up. Now, we got wires and stuff here. You could get hurt.
In other words, you're denying my divine rights to worship the God of my choice in the house of the Lord of my desired faith.
Yeah, until 2 o'clock when you get your divine rights back.
I see. Have your name, please.
Yeah. Yeah, my name is Lenny. Lenny Moyes.
Forget it, George.
Forget it? I can forget my watch, my luggage, my money. I am not going to forget my divine rights. Moyes. Okay, Mr. Moyes. Please let your network people know they can expect a letter from my legal people. Come on, Gwen. Mr. Moyes, don't know if you're a religious man, but if I were you at 2 o'clock, I'd start praying for my job.
Come on.
George, what are we doing wrong? We can't ride. We can't walk. We can't eat. We can't pray.
Well, we can think. As long as we got our brains, we can think.
Oh, they'll get that too, George. You'll see.
Stop talking like that. We're not licked yet.
Yes, we are. We're licked, George. We surrender, New York. You win.
We don't surrender. We don't surrender. You hear that, New York? We don't quit. Now, how do you like that? You go ahead and you can rob me and starve me and break my teeth and my wife's ankles. I'm not leaving. You're just a city.
George, somebody will hear you.
Well, I'm a person, and persons are stronger than cities. This is George Kellerman talking. And you're not getting away with anything. I got all your names and your addresses.
Gwen, we're riding in a car to the Waldorf, and they're going to give us our luggage and a room and a nice hot bath and a decent meal. And I'm through fooling around.
How, George? How will we get there?
How? Uh-huh. I'll show you how.
George steps out into the traffic and stops a large black chauffeur-driven car.
Will you help?
Help us, please. My wife can't walk, and we're both weak, and we've got to get to the Waldorf Astoria. You got any decency as a human being, any compassion, you won't leave us here. Gwen!
The man in the back of the car opens the door and invites George and Gwen into the car.
Bless you, sir. You knew what my wife and I had been through. You wouldn't believe it. To Mr. and Mrs. George Kellerman from out of town, Ohio.
Manuel Vargas. I am from out of town, too. Oh. Cuba.
Oh, really? Here on business?
Just arrived. I am the new delegate of Cuba to the United Nations.
Oh. Imagine that.
Didn't you know the first person who's been nice to us is another out of town?
Huh?
Our Cuban mission is on 66th and Park. I will get off there and my chauffeur will take you to your destination.
Outside the Cuban building, a large group of protesters have gathered. Their placards are demanding a stop to hijackings on aircraft.
Creo que es peligroso.
Lock the doors, lock the doors. We'll walk the rest of the way. Come on, Gwen.
As soon as the car turns the corner into the street where the protesters have gathered, the angry mob attack it. They block its path and jump onto the bonnet and begin to violently rock it.
Can't you tell them we're not with you? Americanos, I speak of neutral.
The protesters bang on the car windows with their hands.
We're from Ohio, Twin Oaks, Ohio. My husband's in the plastic business.
Bastard. Look, what is the police? We were promised police protection.
George, don't you sit there for heaven's sake, can't you do something?
Don't panic! It's just a demonstration.
And then they're gonna kill us! Look at their faces!
Try not to look afraid, that's what they want. Oh. Show no fear.
All right. Yes, all right. George, just wave your hand nice.
They all sit back in the seat, grinning and waving to the angry crowd. Two police cars arrive, several officers jump out and begin to quickly disperse the crowd. The press photograph and film the incident. The policemen struggle with the protesters as they attempt to clear them from the car. The officers extract the Cuban diplomat out of the vehicle and escort him into the building. Officer Myers gets to the car and opens the back door to find George and Gwen sitting on the back seat.
What the hell are you doing here?
Come on, come on, come on. I'm still not talking to you from last night. Get us out of here.
Come on, come on.
They're taking pictures. It'll be on television. Communists. My whole career is over.
I'm blocking out. Somebody help me. I'm blocking out.
I'm carrying commie perverts.
Don't pull. Please don't pull. Oh, my God. My straps are broken. Come on. Get down.
George and Gwen are bundled into the back of a police car and driven away from the unruly mob.
What time is it?
5 minutes after eight.
We can still make it, Gwen. We still got a chance.
George, I really think I'm going to pass out.
Huh? Well, no, you're not. Gwen, wait till we get to the hotel. You can pass out there.
No, I'm going to pass out here. I'm dizzy. I'm going to faint. I can tell.
No, you're not. Gwen, you're not.
I am. Watch.
She passed out. 8:05 and she passes out.
The squad car swings around in the road with its lights flashing and stops outside the front of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Officer Myers helps Gwen out of the car.
1918029. Those are two batch numbers I'm not forgetting.
Thank you very much.
What are you thanking him for? Deserting us? Will you stop thanking everybody? Excuse me.
George marches purposely through the reception area, pulling Gwen along behind him. The man he spoke to on the plane is at the check-in desk.
My name is George Kellerman. I was here last night. Look, I better not have any trouble with you.
Hello. Hello. I see you made it. Just got here myself. I stayed in Boston last night.
1421, Mr. Cooper.
Well, they held a room for you, huh?
Oh, sure. Just wired ahead. What about you?
Same thing.
Well, see you around sometime.
Yeah, see you. It'll be foggy again. He'll still be in Boston.
Now, can I help you, sir?
Yes, my name is George Kellerman.
Oh, Mr. Kellerman. One moment, please.
Oh, don't tell me one moment, please. I don't have one moment. I was told to come here this morning, and if I don't get the room,
we have your room, Mr. Kellerman, suite 927. I was just getting a message that was left for you. Oh, things certainly have eased up since the transit strike was settled. Ah, here we are. Your luggage arrived from the airport and was sent up to your room. Now, if you'll just sign the register.
Well, they finally settled. They knew they were going to settle. Why didn't they settle yesterday?
Are you all right, ma'am?
Well, does she look all right? Do you know what this woman has been through? Do you have any idea?
Tell him later, George. Help me now.
Could I have a bellboy to help me with my wife, please?
Front.
Don't worry, Gwen. You're going to get hot food in the bath and tape for your ankles.
Help Mrs. Kellerman to 927.
Yes, sir.
I'm so humiliated.
You'll all be in the lawsuit. Murray, the humiliation, everything. Bed. Put her on the bed.
The bellboy, George, and Gwen all roll back onto the bed.
Somebody turn on the bath.
What time is it?
17 minutes to 9.
17 minutes? I got 17 minutes to eat and dress and shave. Where's my suitcase?
On the rack, sir. Oh. Will that be all, sir?
Oh, you're waiting for a tip. All I got is 4 cents, 4 pennies, and that's it. I mean, if you're interested, you can have them, but otherwise, thank you very much.
Right, sir.
The bath, please turn on the bath.
Oh, you can have a bath when I leave. Call room service and get hot food for two people. Tell them I only got 17 minutes.
Oh. Hello, may I have room service and hurry, please? I have no feeling in the lower third of my body. You hear me, George? What's wrong, George?
It's locked. The suitcase is locked.
Why don't you open it with the key?
What key?
The key that you keep in your wallet that opens the suitcase that... Oh, my God. You don't have the key.
Murray has the key. In there is a clean shirt and a razor and shaving cream. And out there is a crook with glasses and my key. Oh, please. Please, if there's any justice, let Murray get mugged by the man who took my watch.
Can't you break it open with a knife?
You know what that suitcase is called, huh? Diplomatic courier. It's for couriers with important papers for diplomats. Can't get it open with a hand grenade.
How about a locksmith?
In 17 minutes, he'd have to feed me and shave me while he's opening the suitcase. When it's the last time that I try good luggage, I tell you, never again, never again.
Hello? Hello, room service. Is it possible to get hot food in 10 minutes? It's not possible to get hot food in 10 minutes, at least an hour. Thank you, but at least an hour, George. There's a convention in the hotel.
I hope it's morticians, because I may kill somebody.
Oh, George, why don't you just call them and tell them you'll be a few minutes late? I'm sure they'll understand.
There's no room for lateness in a company that makes plastic precision instruments. 9 o'clock means 9 o'clock. Any slob can show up at 10 o'clock. Damn it, I'm going to be there by 9. I want this job more than anything in the world. A little obstacle like New York City is not going to stop me. You hear me? You hear me?
I hear you.
They got my money, they got my watch, they got my tooth. They didn't stop me, did they? They didn't stop me. You want something in this life bad enough? Nothing can stop you, right? Right? Is that right? I'll be back in 1 hour. I'm going to be the vice president in charge of sales, New York division. Oh, my God. Ben, I want to tell you something. No matter what happens, thank you, love, for standing by me.
I just want you to be happy, too. God, your beard.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. It's getting worse. Yes, it's getting worse.
George goes to answer the door.
A basket of fruit, sir. Compliments of the manager.
Good. Let me have an apple.
He cringes as he bites into the apple with his broken tooth. Looking very dishevelled, George arrives at the Modern Office Building for his interview.
Hello,
Mr. Kellerman is here, Mr. Drexel.
Send him in.
Yes, sir. You may go in, Mr. Kellerman.
Thank you.
He pulls down his curled-up shirt collars and smooths down his hair with his hands as he makes his way to Mr. Drexel's office.
Come in.
Yes?
I'm Kellerman.
Well, Kellerman, 9 o'clock on the dot. To tell you the truth, with all the transit trouble we've had, I didn't expect to see you here on time.
Oh, it was no problem, sir. A couple of minor inconveniences. Gwen! Gwen?
Gwen is soaking her feet in the bath.
She doubled the salary. Company car, they'll find us an apartment, any neighborhood we want, and our choice of schools for the kids, our private schools. And we got 2 seats for all the New York Giants home games and a season subscription to the ballet. Isn't that crazy about me? Broken tooth and all.
What did you say, George?
What did I say? Yeah. What do you think I said?
I don't know, George. I was hoping you would say no. I was hoping you would say that you and your wife don't really belong in New York. You wanted to live the rest of your life in Ohio. But you never wanted to see a big city again as long as you live. But you don't want to live here or in Chicago or San Francisco or New Orleans or Paris or any other place where people have to live on top of each other. And they don't have enough room to walk or to breathe or to smile at each other. You don't want to step on garbage in the streets or be attacked by dogs or have to give away watches in the middle of your sleep to men in black capes. That you were through traveling on trains that had no place to sit and no food to eat. And you didn't want to fly in airplanes that have no place to land and no luggage for you when you land there. You wish you never came here. The only thing in the world you really wanted was to pick up your wife and carry her to the airport and fly home and live happily ever after. That's what I was hoping you would say, George.
That's funny. That's what I told him. Word for word.
No.
George and Gwen fly back to Ohio. Aboard the plane, the stewardess brings them a tray with a meal on it.
Coffee or tea with your dinner?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
No, thank you. We're going to have a big meal with our family as soon as we get in.
Oh, will we be getting in on time? My children are waiting at the airport.
Oh, well, we anticipate no delays. We'll be landing in another 40 minutes.
Thank you.
Will you stop worrying? We're going home.
Well, I won't feel better till I'm back in my own house. George, could I please have a cup of coffee? It won't spoil my dinner.
You can't relax. You've been a nervous wreck this whole trip.
George leaves his seat to get Gwen's coffee.
Excuse me, can I get by, please?
Sit down.
I beg your pardon?
I said sit down.
You don't understand. I want to go in there.
You'll go where I tell you to go. Now, everybody, sit down and be quiet. This plane is going to Havana, Cuba.
The hijacker points a gun at George while his accomplice enters the cockpit.
Oh, my God.
The end.